This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We're going to shift gears here on the show because we want to talk about the new Black Press. What is the new Black Press? Well, author Deborah Douglas is going to tell us all about it. She is here on The Shaletta Show. She's an award-winning writer. She has columns for Medium Magazine and so many other places. This one is in Neiman Reports. Deborah, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me, Shaletta.
Now, you know, when I hear the word the new Black Press, I got to go all the way back. Let me take you back to the first thing that disturbed me as a broadcaster in news. And I didn't even realize, honestly, I didn't realize, and this is young me, not old me, but this young me, you know, early in my journalism career me.
Mm-hmm.
It's Hurricane Katrina, right?
Okay.
Remember those images and how horrific that scene was? And the city of New Orleans was underwater. And there was an African-American woman. She was walking through waist-high water, and she was holding food and Pampers. And the headline said she was looting. Looters in New Orleans and, you know they're taking advantage, they're breaking into the stores. And you could clearly see this woman had food and Pampers. When you loot, you got TVs and stereos. You know, we know what looting looks like. This woman looked like she was trying to take care of her family. And then, like, the very next day, there was a picture of a white woman in waist-high water. And she was carrying food and something else. And the headline said that, you know, New Orleans residents try to survive the best way they can. And so many people pointed out that the media, the press, my profession, was willing to paint an African-American woman as a criminal and a looter and somebody who was breaking the law based on one picture. But when the similar picture of a white woman doing almost exactly the same thing came out the very next day, she was a survivor.
Right.
And that, I think, for me, as a journalist, as a broadcaster, was my turning point to open my eyes and see that all things in news were not equal and that people on a senior level and people who were sitting at the table when the doors closed and making decisions about the captions on photos and the headlines and the stories that were being told were the ones who would shape how people felt about folks who look like me. And so I was determined from that moment on that I was going to be in the room at that table. And if I couldn't get to the table, I was going to be sitting outside, bamming on the window like, hey, what y'all in there talking about? Because if it has to do with anything about people who look like me, I want to be a part of the discussion. And so you're writing about the new Black Press.
Yes.
Tell me what this new Black Press is.
Well, it's all the people, all the Black people who are by hook or crook, no matter what level of funding that they have, are trying to tell true and authentic stories about the lived Black experience. And I just love the visual way you just described that Hurricane Katrina coverage, because I hold up those side-by-side comparisons in my cross-cultural journalism classes. I teach journalism at DePauw University in central Indiana. And I hold those up all the time and say, what's wrong with these pictures? And what you just described is what I call asset framing of the white woman and deficit framing of the black woman. And so whether or not we're talking about the people who post on social media, people who capture videos of protests, people who run online news sites, black people who run podcasts, because storytelling takes many forms, they are the antidote to historic deficit framing of the black lived experience. And if you want to know a little bit more about what that is asset framing is really framing people by who they really are three-dimensionally, not the one worst possible thing that has ever happened to them, which has historically happened with traditional mass media coverage of black communities. They'll take one bad data point or one bad thing that's happened to the community, say, like crime, and then we forever and ever get defined by that problem. W.E.B. Du Bois talked about this. He wrote about it. How does it feel to be a problem? But being black is so much more than that. Yes, there are problems that need to be tackled, but also there's black joy. There's black visionary, aspirations. You know, we're full people like everybody else.
Every community has problems. However, yeah. And this is what I struggle with and what I'm fussing about and what I'm kicking stuff over here at WCC Radio about is we only show up to the black communities when there is a problem, is because we don't have any representation in the newsroom. So when something good happens, we don't have a connection and we don't know about it. For instance,
you show up to the community as opposed to being in community. And so in journalism, there's a move afoot to have more engagement at the community level, not just, pump out content, but to actually engage with them through activities, or it's just a lot of different ways that you can be in conversation. But if you never go into those communities and really develop a deep relationship with the people in the communities, if you just sort of like helicopter in and then fly out, then you can't have authentic coverage. And to your point, yes, I run newsrooms. I was a deputy features editor at the Chicago Sun-Times, and I was number two on the editorial page. So I know exactly what this is like when you don't have enough people who are connected to the community to actually help tell a true story about that community. I remember once I was talking to an editor. I was a young kind of whippersnapper editor, and I was asking for more responsibility one day, and he was like, oh, just hang on, you'll be fine. I'm like, no, I don't think you understand. I'm like, when Deborah Douglas comes to work every day, she's just not a representative of herself. I represent a whole community of people who expect me to bear witness to their lived experience. So when you say hold on, you're saying hold on to the whole South Side. You're saying hold on to the whole West Side. You're saying hold on to all black people. So what you got?
Yeah. Yeah, and we can't hold on any longer. Now, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, you have got Ms. Deborah to talk to me about the portion of this column that says newsrooms cannot escape racial tension and exhaustion. What did you mean by that? She'll tell us next on The Shaletta Show. Back Against the World is what it's like. 122 right here on The Shaletta Show. I've got the honor and the privilege of talking to Professor Deborah Douglas. This new article is just blowing my mind. I put a link up on my Facebook and Twitter pages. You've got to check it out. It's called Meet the New Black Press. One of the things you tackle in the article is racism and exhaustion and tensions in the newsroom. 7% of newsrooms answered this survey. Tell us what they found.
Okay, I don't remember the numbers offhand, but I can tell you the numbers are always what the numbers are. And it says that we are not there, no matter what's going on, no matter what the rhetoric is at the time about the importance of diversity. When the media market took a dip in 2008, when the housing crash happened, and people were being laid off, there was no thought to diversity. It was no thought to, okay, if we slough off this category of people from our newsrooms, we'll suffer, you know, in terms of the story we tell. So, you know, there's been a lot of lip service since the Kerner Commission in 1968. So the numbers are always what they are, and the numbers is that is never enough of us, not only in the newsroom, but in decision-making positions. Because when you see, like, you know, the fullness of the stories that come out, you hear the same things over and over and over again, and then certain communities get framed a certain kind of way, and then, you know, false framing becomes a sort of objective truth about who people are. And so, you know, if the representation right isn't right in the place where the story begins, the story is not going to be right.
No.
As it moves through, you know, our imaginations and then our feelings about who we are and then the truth about who we are.
Yeah. In your piece, it says Black salaried positions make up only 7% of newsrooms that answered this survey, compared to 78% of those jobs going to white folks. And Hispanic and Asians hold only 7% together of those salaried newsroom positions. And we're seeing this play out in real time because the L.A. Times just apologized, you know, for their framing of African-Americans and how, you know, they did stories decade after decade after decade, making Black people look like monsters, like they were going to invade white suburbs and attack people and their children. And we were such a threat to their way of life. The LA Times, a major newspaper throughout the world, was framing Black and brown people to make us look like criminals and not telling the other side of our amazing story and journey.
Well, the thing is that the practice or the orthodoxy in the news business has always been to frame from the position of established power. So that's usually like what's best for corporations, what's best for people who have a lot of money. And we have historically failed to center regular, everyday people, really of all colors. So when you think about Black people, we're very rarely centered in our own stories. Like we're rarely the driver in the story. It's the motivation or what's best for established power that that dictates how the story is told. If we took that and turned it upside down, which I have been doing in my career and in my practice, and I know many, many other journalists who are doing this too, but if you flip it upside down, you get a different type of story. You know, every month we get the jobs report, right? How many times have you heard a jobs report where we go, so many jobs are created last month? Well, okay, so that gives a pat on the back to corporate America. But how many of those jobs pay a living wage? Let's dig into that number.
And how many of them are in our community? Yes.
Yeah, yes. How many people gave up because they couldn't find anything? Like, let's tell the real job story, because we know the real job story in our community.
And, you know, a part of that sometimes is time, is laziness on behalf of reporters. You know, and that's why we keep seeing the same real estate agent on TV. That's why we keep seeing the same doctor, the same banker.
I'll push back on that, Shaletta. I have managed some lady reporters, but it's because it's not enough of us in the newsroom. And that speaks to, like, just the precariousness of the industry in and of itself, and the fact that, you know, large investors are buying up these properties and they don't really see the value of what we do. So we don't have the bodies in the newsroom to actually dig deeper. But I mean, it takes time to cook and season really good journalism. And a lot of journalists don't have the time to really dig in. And so what you get is just the shallow reporting. And then there's no check on implicit bias. And, you know, you get these shortcuts. And like you said, then people go to the same sources over and over again. I mean, I had a list of people that I would make for my staff to say, you can't ever talk to these people again. I'm tired of seeing these people. Go meet new people. You don't have to turn anything in on Monday. Just go out and here's $10. Buy somebody a piece of cake and some coffee and get to know new people. If you just spend 3 minutes with somebody, they will tell you 10,000 stories.
Right, right. That is absolutely true. And, you know, I'm trying to teach my children stories about our history, about our culture. Our family just won a brand new RV, and so we are hitting the road.
Ooh.
And so we have pre-ordered your new book that's coming out January, mid-January on Amazon, U.S. Civil Rights Trail, A Traveler's Guide to the People, Places, and Events that Made the Movement. And so, Professor Douglas, I am so excited about this book. My kids can't wait to visit some of these cities. What can readers expect in your new book, The U.S. Civil Rights Trail?
Well, a lot of different things. First of all, a lot of our civil rights icons, civil rights heroes, are still alive, but they're very, very old. So you will hear their voices in my book. I tracked a lot of them down. And so they speak to us in this book. But also, there are a lot of civil rights and Black history museums in the South, because I stayed in the South for my year of travel to write this book. So you're going to have a really great experience no matter where you go. The Civil Rights Museum in Memphis is awesome. The Birmingham Civil Rights Institute has the jail bars from the Birmingham jail that Martin Luther King was in, mm-hmm. when he wrote the letter from Birmingham jail. There's 16th Street Baptist Church there. That's a story that, I mean, it's just a powerful story in and of itself, but especially if you're traveling with children, that's just a really great on-ramp to the civil rights story for them, because it implicates children, because that's where the 1963 Children's Crusade was staged. There's going to be a new museum in Charleston. It won't be here until 2022, but it'll be powerful because Charleston is so important to us, because 40% or more of enslaved Africans came through the port in Charleston. And so that's going to be a museum that really focuses on genealogical research. The Mormon Church has actually invested a lot of money to help us trace our genealogical roots. And I'm trying to figure out some other museums in Atlanta. I mean, so on the museum front, you are set.
This Girl, is I can't store. Wait.
All the food is going to be good.
Yes, I cannot wait.
I encourage you to get buffalo ribs if you go to Little Rock, Arkansas. Any place in the South, pull off on the side of the road and get yourself some boiled peanuts. And if you can eat a fried pickle, I would try that too.
I mean, when I saw the book, I was like, this is what we need. Because one of the things that we want to do is take our children and expose them to their history. You know, we get so caught up in everyday life and visiting family and friends. But we also want to use the RV that we won from Camping World to learn. And, you know, I was trying to figure out, how do we get started? Where do we go? And you have pretty much handicapped that for me in this book. I'm like, you know what? Let me just be lazy and turn the page, whatever, because she's going to tell me exactly where I need to go, what the sites are, you know, what kind of history my children are going to learn. You know, what was your thought process in writing this book? Was it to educate kids? I mean, how did you come up with this concept?
Yeah, I mean, it's really for everybody. It's for people who are history buffs. It's people who are really enthralled by this notion of America and democracy. It's for people who are involved and care about the neo-civil rights movement that we're involved in right now, because that the mid-century civil rights story is really living history. Everybody that I met had a civil rights story. You know, you can drive down the road and see the store, what remains of the store where Emmett Till was the day, you know, that he was engaged with Carolyn Bryant. This is just also real and so palpable. And I wanted to make it real to us. And I wanted to draw a through line to what we're experiencing right now. I want to encourage people to go back and talk to their family members, whether or not you're white, black, brown, Asian, whatever, and ask, what was our family doing at this period, and then how have our lives materially changed as a result of this movement? You know, the Selma to Montgomery march was about voting, and that's how we got the Voting Rights Act of 1965 passed. Well, a key provision, the preclearance provision of that act, was knocked down a few years ago, and this is why we're having a hard time voting right now. So, I mean, we are all implicated in this story. This is Black history. This is American history. This is why I wanted to write this book.
Well, you all have to get out there and get it. It's on pre-order right now. You can get it at Amazon. U.S. Civil Rights Trail, A Traveler's Guide to the People, Places, and Events That Made the Movement. Professor Deborah Douglas, thank you so much for being on the Shaletta Show. It has been my honor.
Thank you, Shaletta. I appreciate you so much.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.